September 8, 1999, Horry County, South Carolina. 22-year-old Lisa Myers Nugent phones her mother to let her know that she is staying at a resort with her estranged spouse, Frank Isley, but is planning to end the relationship and return home to North Carolina. After not hearing from her for nearly 2 weeks, Lisa's parents travel to her residence and discover that it has been ransacked and Lisa and Frank have disappeared. A warrant is issued for Frank's arrest on unrelated charges, and he remains a wanted fugitive for 4 years until he is found. However, Lisa is no longer with Frank, and he fails to provide any information on her whereabouts, so no trace of her is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail When Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and we're going to be covering an unsolved missing persons case, the 1999 disappearance of Lisa Myers Nugent. This week, I'm taking a brief vacation to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, a place I've never visited before, and to commemorate the occasion, I thought I would cover a cold case from the area. One of the most famous cases from Myrtle Beach was the 2009 disappearance of 17-year-old Brittany Drexel, who was abducted and murdered while traveling there for spring break, but last year, her remains were finally found, and a suspect was charged and convicted of the crime. While today's case involves another young woman who was likely the victim of foul play, but tragically, we've gone over 2 decades without a resolution. What's also interesting about this story is that it was featured on one of the last episodes of Unsolved Mysteries during its original run, but even though the case is still unsolved, the segment is currently not available for viewing on the show's official FilmRise channel on Amazon Prime and YouTube. At the time it originally aired, the segment was pretty much 2 mysteries rolled up into one, because not only was Lisa Myers Nugent a missing person, but her estranged spouse, Frank Isley, had also disappeared. He was technically a wanted fugitive who had an active arrest warrant on unrelated charges, and while he is not officially considered to be a suspect in Lisa's disappearance, the authorities wanted to question him. Frank was known for being a very controlling and paranoid spouse, and even though he apparently took Lisa to an oceanfront resort in the Myrtle Beach area in an attempt to patch things up, Lisa was still planning to end the relationship and move back in with her parents. However, before this could happen, Lisa and Frank abandoned their home and vanished without a trace, and even though Frank was eventually tracked down and arrested on other charges years later, he denied any knowledge of Lisa's whereabouts and claimed that she had simply decided to walk out on him. There are definitely good reasons to be suspicious of Frank, but without a body or any evidence that a crime took place, the authorities have been powerless to do anything. But since Lisa is still missing, I thought now would be an ideal time to explore her case on the podcast. As a disclaimer, I should clarify that Myers is Lisa's family surname, while Nugent is the surname of her first husband. Even though Lisa was separated from him at the time she went missing, and he had not been a part of her life for years, she never did officially divorce him. For this reason, most of the missing persons websites and articles about this case refer to her as Lisa Myers Nugent, so that's how I'll be referring to her on this episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Lisa Myers Nugent. Our story begins in 1999, and our central figure is 22-year-old Lisa Ann Myers Nugent, the only child of her parents, Jerry and Brenda Myers. 3 years earlier, Lisa had been living with her family in Summerfield, North Carolina, but when she was only 18 years old, she decided to drop out of high school in order to get married to her boyfriend, Ricky Dean Nugent. Ricky was 8 years older than Lisa, and the marriage was done without the consent of her parents. The union turned out to be a complete disaster, as Ricky was abusive and wound up being arrested and convicted of assaulting Lisa no less than 3 times. Lisa finally separated from Ricky, but she soon wound up crossing paths with 27-year-old Frank Lloyd Isley Jr., who had 1 divorce under his belt and 2 children from his previous marriage. Lisa and Frank soon started a relationship, and according to Lisa's parents, the couple appeared to be inseparable. When Jerry and Brenda first met Frank, they believed he was a polite, well-mannered, and ambitious gentleman, and he told them that he would take good care of Lisa. But even though the relationship appeared to be a happy one on the surface, the Myerses noticed that Frank seemed to grow possessive and paranoid, as he wanted to be with Lisa at all times and participate in all of her conversations. In fact, if Lisa ever went to the bathroom and Frank felt she was gone too long, he would yell out to her and ask what she was doing before heading into the bathroom to check on her. Frank also seemed to have an obsession with constantly checking the odometer on his pickup truck in order to track Lisa's movements. During one visit to her parents, they witnessed Frank confront Lisa and ask where she went because he noticed that the mileage on the odometer was higher than usual. Even though Lisa told him that she had simply driven the truck to the store to get a drink, Frank didn't seem to believe her and grew angrier. At one point, Lisa and Frank were watching a movie on TV alongside her parents, and the film's plot involved a woman who was trying to get away from her spouse. This prompted Frank to turn to Lisa and say, quote, "If you ever leave me like that, I'll kill you before I let anyone else have you," end quote. He then proceeded to slam his fist onto the ground, and Lisa became visibly upset. When Brenda confronted Frank about this, he responded by laughing about the incident and acted like the whole thing was just a joke. In May of 1997, Lisa told her parents that she and Frank wanted to relocate to his original hometown of Conway, South Carolina, which was located about 200 miles away in Horry County and is part of the Myrtle Beach metropolitan area. While Jerry and Brenda had a bad feeling about the situation, they could not dissuade Lisa, so she and Frank moved into a rented house on Flossie Road, just outside of Conway, where they would reside with their dog, Princess. 2 months after they arrived, Lisa and Frank got married, though she never actually informed her parents or friends about the wedding. However, since Lisa had never actually gotten divorced from her ex-husband, Ricky, her marriage to Frank was technically not considered to be legal. In spite of this, the couple continued to live together in Horry County for the next 2 years, though there were warning signs that Frank was becoming more possessive. Following her arrival in the area, Lisa got a job with a courier service, but Frank persuaded her to work alongside him at a construction business he started called Isley's Painting and Odd Jobs, presumably so he could keep an eye on her. There was one incident where Lisa's parents witnessed Frank follow Lisa into the bathroom and kick Princess out of her lap, and when Jerry and Brenda bought their daughter a new Jeep, a Suzuki Samurai, Lisa called them and said that Frank was upset about this. During this time period, the only way Lisa's parents ever communicated with her was by calling Frank's pager and waiting for Lisa to phone them back. In September of 1999, Jerry and Brenda traveled to Conway in order to pay Lisa a visit on Labor Day weekend, but they would witness more disturbing behavior from Frank. At one point, Lisa and Brenda drove into town to go shopping when Frank's pickup truck suddenly appeared behind them. He started riding their bumper and erratically driving around them at high speed, and when Brenda asked what was going on, Lisa revealed that Frank had gotten involved in heavy drugs. For the next 24 hours, Frank failed to return home, and by the morning of September the 6th, the Myerses were so concerned about the situation that they finally convinced Lisa to come back home to North Carolina with them. After she packed up some belongings, Lisa climbed into her Jeep and followed her parents back to their residence in Summerfield. Well, by the time the family arrived, they discovered that Frank had left over 12 messages on their answering machine, asking where Lisa was and expressing his desire to talk things over with her. The following day, Frank unexpectedly showed up at the Myers residence in his pickup truck and told Lisa he had rented a nearby motel room. He wanted her to accompany him there so they could talk about the issues with their relationship in private, and after they spent the night together, Frank promised that he would take Lisa back to her parents' residence if that's what she wanted. Brenda openly expressed her concern about this and told Lisa that if she climbed into Frank's truck, she wasn't sure if she would ever see her again. However, Lisa assured her mother that everything was okay and drove off with Frank, leaving her Jeep behind in her parents' driveway. Well, the following day, on September the 8th, Lisa did not return home as planned, so Brenda phoned Frank's pager. She soon received a call back from Lisa, who told her that Frank never took her to a motel and instead drove her all the way back to South Carolina. Instead, they had checked into the Sea Mist Oceanfront Resort in the Cherry Grove Beach neighborhood of North Myrtle Beach, which is where Lisa was calling from. She told her mother that she was going to remain in Conway to assist Frank with a home repair job he had started, which would take nearly 2 weeks. But after that, Lisa promised to return to Summerfield on September the 20th and move back in with her parents for good. Since she had left her Jeep there, Lisa did not have her own transportation, but told Brenda, quote, "If I have to walk home, I'm coming home." She then told her mother that she loved her and ended the call, but this turned out to be the last time that Brenda ever heard from Lisa. For the next week and a half, Lisa's parents attempted to call Frank's pager several times, but never heard back from Lisa or Frank. On September the 17th, the Myerses finally got in touch with Carolyn Dupree, Lisa's closest friend in Horry County. Carolyn said that she last heard from Lisa on September the 8th, after Lisa called her from the Sea Mist Oceanfront Resort. She told Carolyn that Frank had stepped out of the hotel room and she wanted to go home. During their conversation, Carolyn could hear the sound of Frank's pager beeping in the background. When Lisa said it was her parents, Carolyn suggested that she call them to let them know what was going on, and shortly thereafter, Brenda received her phone call from Lisa. But most distressingly, Carolyn also revealed that on September the 12th, she had received an odd phone call from Frank, who told her that Lisa had left him. He claimed that 3 days earlier, he and Lisa had fallen asleep in each other's arms on the couch, but when he woke up, Lisa was gone. Frank also claimed that Lisa had taken $1,200 from his pockets as he slept and ran off with her dog Princess, even though she left behind some puppies that Princess had given birth to. Carolyn said she told Frank that Lisa's parents needed to know about what was going on and asked for their phone number, but Frank refused to give it to her, stating that she, quote-unquote, had no reason for it now. This news story prompted Jerry and Brenda to drive to Conway and contact the Horry County Police Department. An officer agreed to accompany them to Lisa and Frank's house on Flossie Road, and when they arrived there, the front door was locked. However, they were able to enter the residence through an unlocked window and were shocked to discover that the place had been ransacked. There was no sign of Lisa, Frank, or their dog Princess, so the Myerses filed an official missing persons report for their daughter. Unfortunately, the area had recently been hit with Hurricane Floyd, which ravaged through the Bahamas and the southeastern United States and passed through Horry County. The hurricane caused a total of 85 fatalities and $6.5 billion in damage, and when the Myerses first arrived in Conway, there was still heavy flooding. Since law enforcement was so overwhelmed with managing the destruction of Hurricane Floyd, they initially could not focus much attention on Lisa's disappearance. Since there was no direct evidence of foul play, investigators had to acknowledge the possibility that Lisa could have taken off voluntarily in order to get away from Frank. However, her parents did not believe that, and felt that Lisa would have attempted to contact them if she was hiding out. The Horry County PD eventually spoke with Frank's landlady, who confirmed that Frank had packed up his belongings and moved out of the house weeks earlier, but the landlady had not seen Lisa and had no idea where she was. Jerry and Brenda decided to go driving around Horry County in order to perform their own search for Lisa, and at one point, they pulled over to the side of the road. They were soon surprised to notice Frank pulling over his pickup truck on the opposite side of the road before climbing out. When Jerry called out to Frank, he immediately jumped back into his truck and drove off, and while the Myerses attempted to chase after him, they soon lost him. By January of 2000, the investigation had hit a brick wall, so the lead detective, Robert Maxwell, decided to enter Frank Isley's name into a national crime database. He discovered that sometime in October, 6 weeks after Lisa was last seen, Frank had gotten arrested over 400 miles away in Thomasville, Georgia, on the charges of burglary and cocaine possession. Frank was subsequently released on bail and was due back in Thomas County Superior Court to face the charges on February the 21st. This prompted Maxwell to travel to Thomasville on that date in order to wait for Frank at the courthouse, but Frank never showed up, so a bench warrant was issued for Frank's arrest on the cocaine possession charge. A second bench warrant would later be served against Frank in Horry County Family Court on the charge of failure to pay child support to his ex-wife. Even though Frank was technically now a wanted fugitive, the Horry County PD did not believe there was enough evidence to publicly name him as a suspect in Lisa's disappearance, though they still wanted to question him about it. In September of 2000, the Greensboro News and Record published a one-year anniversary article about Lisa's case, which contained comments from Frank's sister, Joy. She confirmed that she had not heard from Frank in a year and had no idea of his current whereabouts, so she was planning to file a missing persons report for him as well. Detective Maxwell got in touch with Unsolved Mysteries, and they agreed to produce a segment about this story, which aired in August of 2002. Investigators were hoping that viewers would provide some useful information to help them locate both Lisa and Frank, who still had active warrants on him for his arrest. Well, in March of 2003, authorities in Thomas County were informed that Frank had been attempting to use someone else's name to apply for a driver's license in New Mexico. In August of that year, a man matching Frank's description was arrested in New Mexico, and while he was using a different name, his fingerprints were taken and sent to Thomas County for a comparison. However, even though the suspect resembled Frank in every way, New Mexico authorities were soon informed that the fingerprints did not match, so they had no choice but to let him go. Well, it turned out this discrepancy had been the result of a typographical error in Frank's file in Thomas County, which did not classify his fingerprints correctly. On October the 24th, Frank was arrested again under a false name in New Mexico, but this time, Thomas County finally fixed the error and sent them the correct fingerprints, which wound up being a match and confirmed Frank's identity. He eventually wound up being extradited back to South Carolina to face his outstanding charge of failure to pay child support. It's not clear how much, if any, jail time Frank had to serve for his charges in Georgia and South Carolina, but all I do know is that Lisa was not with Frank at the time he was arrested and did not provide any information about her whereabouts. In February of 2006, Horry County investigators received a tip from a former acquaintance of Frank's who was facing their own legal troubles and wanted to provide some information about Lisa's disappearance. This person alleged that Lisa's remains were buried on Frank's former property on Flossie Road, so this prompted police to get a warrant to perform a new search of the residence. They had apparently been told that there was a, quote-unquote, cut like a doorway in the floor, and a cadaver dog, as well as two geology professors from Coastal Carolina University, were brought in to assist with the search. The professors used ground-penetrating radar at the location, but the results were inconclusive, and no evidence was found to indicate that Lisa might be buried there. The investigation once again reached a standstill, and on February the 14th, 2020, Frank Isley, who had gone back to living in Horry County, passed away at the age of 50. Like I mentioned earlier, he never provided any additional information about what might have happened to his former spouse, so after nearly 24 years, Lisa Myers Nugent continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So I've often expressed my frustration with Unsolved Mysteries omitting segments on their official FilmRise channel and not making them available for public viewing. The explanation they've always provided is that this has been done for, quote-unquote, legal reasons, and while that certainly would make sense for some of their missing segments, I really don't know why this occurs for segments about cases which are still unsolved, such as the disappearance of Lisa Myers Nugent. In fact, since it was featured in one of the final episodes of the show and didn't get much play in syndication, I'd wager that most Unsolved Mysteries fans have never heard of this case, and it deserves all the additional exposure it can get. I guess you can technically consider this one to be a half-solved mystery, as Lisa and Frank Isley were both missing at the time the segment originally aired. But even though Frank was eventually found, it did not lead the authorities any closer to finding Lisa, and there haven't been any new developments in the investigation for 2 decades. During the early 2000s, Lisa's parents, Jerry and Brenda Myers, did everything they could to get the word out about her disappearance. This included starting a website about her at findlisa.org, though unfortunately, it looks like it's since been taken down. At one point, they lobbied to get Lisa's case featured on America's Most Wanted, but the show turned them down because they said they didn't normally feature missing persons cases. The Myerses argued that this was a little different from the norm, since Lisa may have been harmed by someone who was technically a wanted fugitive with an active arrest warrant. Their frustration only increased when they saw America's Most Wanted produce a segment about the disappearance of intern Chandra Levy, who vanished in Washington, D.C. in May of 2001, before her skeletal remains were found 1 year later. Of course, this was one of the most high-profile cold cases in the United States at that time, so the show was apparently willing to make an exception to their own rule about not featuring missing persons cases. Thankfully, Unsolved Mysteries did agree to feature Lisa's case and give it some mainstream attention, because otherwise, most of its media coverage would have been limited to the Carolinas, and it may have languished in obscurity. So on one hand, there are definitely a lot of red flags in this case, as we have a woman who seemed trapped in a controlling relationship with a man who had made cryptic remarks about never allowing her to leave him, and she just happened to go missing around the time period she was planning to end things and return home to her parents. But on the other hand, there was no direct evidence that foul play had taken place, which is why the Horry County Police Department would not completely discount the possibility that Lisa had decided to take off on her own. Of course, that idea didn't make any sense to Jerry and Brenda Myers, as they were certain that Lisa would have attempted to contact them, and no evidence has ever surfaced these past 24 years to indicate she might still be alive somewhere. This is a very sad story, as it sounds like Lisa got out of an abusive marriage to a violent man and transitioned into a new relationship with another man who seemed much nicer, but he may have been the one who wound up killing her. Unlike Lisa's ex-husband, Ricky Dean Nugent, I haven't read anything to confirm that Frank Isley ever crossed the line into physical abuse, but he definitely came across as a very controlling and domineering spouse, so I would not be surprised if things turned violent behind closed doors. When you factor in that Frank was supposedly involved in heavy drugs at the time Lisa went missing, you can understand how things may have gone horribly wrong. Frank passed away 3 years ago, and there's always a bit of a hopeless feeling when the only person who might know the necessary information to solve a cold case takes that information to their grave. In the past few years, we've had a number of cases in which the perpetrators of unsolved murders have been identified through DNA profiling and genetic genealogy, even though they are already deceased. But that sort of thing is not possible here without Lisa's remains. If you search online, you can find Frank Isley's original obituary from 2020. It's surreal to see him described as a quote-unquote man with a kind heart who loved his family, and someone actually responded to that by leaving a comment in his guestbook calling him a murderer. The obituary also refers to Frank as a lifelong resident of Myrtle Beach, and conveniently neglects to mention that 4-year time period where he was hiding out in other states as a wanted fugitive. I was unable to find out how much jail time Frank served on the outstanding charges against him, but the obituary lists him as the owner of a painting and remodeling business in Myrtle Beach, so he evidently did return to the area at some point and resumed his normal life there. Now, to be fair, Frank was never charged or convicted of any murder or named as a suspect in Lisa's disappearance, but it is always surreal to read glowing obituaries for individuals who are potentially involved in crimes like this. If Frank was guilty, then he definitely had a lot of luck in his favor. Not only was it over a week and a half before Lisa was officially reported missing to the police, but by sheer chance, Hurricane Floyd just happened to hit the Myrtle Beach area and delayed law enforcement from performing a proper investigation. By this point, Frank would have had plenty of time to cover his tracks and flee the area. The whole situation is reminiscent of the unsolved 1992 disappearance of 13-year-old Lee Ochi, which I covered on Minisode number 20 of The Trail Went Cold. That case involved the victim going missing in Tupelo, Mississippi, while Hurricane Andrew was passing through the area, so as you can imagine, this caused a number of complications with the investigation. So looking at the timeline, Frank picked up Lisa from her parents' home in North Carolina on September the 7th, 1999, and the last time Lisa was confirmed to be alive was September the 8th, when she made separate phone calls to her mother and her friend, Carolyn Dupree. In retrospect, it was a very manipulative tactic on Frank's part when he showed up in Summerfield and asked Lisa if she would accompany him to a nearby motel to discuss the relationship. It now seems obvious that Frank never rented a motel room and simply drove Lisa back to South Carolina without stopping. He also made the calculated decision to trick Lisa into leaving her Jeep behind at her parents' residence, as it would be a lot more difficult for her to get away from him again without transportation. It's never been made clear to me why Lisa and Frank wound up checking into the Seamist Oceanfront Resort, but perhaps Frank pushed forward the idea that if they had a brief vacation together at a nice resort, it would help them repair the relationship. Judging from Lisa's phone call to Carolyn the following day, it sounds like she still had an uneasy feeling about the situation. For whatever reason, she was willing to remain in Horry County for the next little while to help Frank with a home repair job, but even if she wanted to end the relationship, Lisa may still have cared enough about Frank to help him out. Whatever the case, I doubt that Lisa was alive for very long after her final phone call to her mother on September the 8th. I'm sure you've seen enough cases in which a woman will go missing and their spouse will try to say that they just took off and have no idea where they went, but also show a disturbing lack of urgency about the whole situation and never bother contacting the authorities to file a missing persons report. Yes, Lisa was trying to get away from Frank, so the idea of her sneaking away in the middle of the night is not a completely implausible one, but once again, why did she not attempt to contact her parents? And since she no longer had access to her Jeep, what did she use as transportation to get away? Whenever there's a missing persons case involving someone who is trapped in a possessive, controlling relationship, there always seems to be a recurring theme. You hear stories about how the victim's domineering spouse had to be around them at all times and monitor everything they did, yet when the victim supposedly vanishes without explanation, the spouse's domineering personality seems to fade and they act curiously blasé about the whole situation. Let's look at this particular relationship. Frank was so controlling of Lisa that her own parents could never contact her directly, and the only communication that was made was by calling Frank's pager. When Lisa left Conway on Labor Day to travel back to Summerfield with her parents, they arrived home to discover that Frank had already left a dozen messages on their answering machine. Yet even though Lisa would supposedly walk out on Frank in the middle of the night a few days later, he never made one phone call to Jerry and Brenda to see if she was there or ask if they knew where she was. Even though the Myerses called Frank's pager several times that particular week, he never attempted to call them back. That's just too much of a personality shift for someone who is described as being possessive and paranoid of his spouse, so it's easy to believe that Frank never attempted to find Lisa because he already knew exactly what happened to her. And of course, it's also very troubling that Frank would suddenly decide to move out of his house and leave the state right after Lisa went missing, even though his roots were in Horry County and he operated his own business there. If Frank legitimately had no idea where Lisa was, how could he be so certain that she wouldn't try to return to the residence at some point in the near future? It's been reported that Jerry and Brenda found the house ransacked when they showed up there several days later, so I'm not sure if that means Frank moved out all of his personal belongings but left Lisa's belongings behind. I don't know if the condition of the house was an indicator that a violent struggle took place there, but perhaps Frank intentionally ransacked the place to cover up any signs of possible foul play. So I'm guessing that at some point, Lisa and Frank checked out of the resort and returned home, and if Lisa was murdered, it likely took place before Frank's phone call to Carolyn on September the 12th. Lisa had told her mother that she was planning to make a permanent return to North Carolina at some point in the near future, and if Frank found out about this, I'm sure things may have escalated into violence. Now, details about Frank's life after he left South Carolina are pretty vague, but we know that he was arrested on burglary and drug possession charges in Georgia only a few weeks after he left, which seems like a sign that he was planning to turn to crime in order to support himself. I would be curious to learn what exactly Frank did for the next few years, as all we know is that he was living under a false identity in New Mexico when he was arrested. During that time period, Frank stopped paying child support to his children from a previous marriage, and his sister claims that he broke off all contact with his family. So if Frank was an innocent man, whose spouse just simply ran off on him, why would he completely uproot his whole life like this? It really does seem obvious that Frank was responsible for Lisa's disappearance, because when you look at his actions, there aren't any alternate scenarios which make sense at all. But thanks to the appearance of Hurricane Floyd, and the delay in launching a proper missing persons investigation, Frank had a lot of time to cover his tracks and dispose of Lisa's body and any other incriminating evidence. Since Frank's capture in 2003, the only major development in the investigation was the tip provided by the former acquaintance, who suggested that Lisa's body had been buried on the property of Frank's residence and possibly underneath the house itself. While a search failed to turn up any evidence, I get the impression that investigators have not completely ruled out the possibility that Lisa's remains might be there. Even though a cadaver dog and ground-penetrating radar were used during the search, it may have been complicated by the fact that the house was on a low-sitting property and had retained a lot of water beneath it. In fact, since the foundation was in such bad shape, firemen had to be brought in to put reinforcements under the building, and they were forced to crawl through sewage because of a leaking septic system. The water and the extreme moisture under the house could have potentially caused a different decomposition on any bodies that might be buried under there and made it more difficult for them to be detected by cadaver dog or ground-penetrating radar. The details about the search were chronicled in a 2014 article published on the website myhorrynews.com, and while he had no conclusive evidence to prove this, one of the geology professors who was involved in the search seemed to have a gut instinct that something was buried under the house. That same article revealed that in order to perform a definitive search and really dig deep into the ground beneath the foundation, the entire house would have to be removed. That sort of thing sounds like it would require a lot of time and resources, but at this point, with no other strong leads in the investigation, I would love to see them try it. But of course, I'm not entirely sure if anyone else is currently living on that property, and while they might be fine with consenting to a police search, removing their entire house might be too much of an issue. I certainly don't rule out the possibility that Lisa might be buried there, because if Frank thoroughly disposed of her body at another location, why would he be compelled to immediately move out of that residence and flee the state when there was no hard evidence of foul play? As someone who worked in construction and home repair, Frank may have known how to bury a body underneath a house in such a way that it would be difficult to recover. Now, we don't have any details about the acquaintance who shared this information about the house with police back in 2006. They were apparently facing legal trouble at the time, so it's possible they were willing to make up anything to feed to the authorities in order to help their own situation. But if this individual was legitimate, it does make me wonder if there are other people out there who have knowledge about what happened to Lisa. Since Frank is no longer with us, this could be the best hope we have of this case being solved and Lisa's remains being recovered. Oh, and one more thing. I know many of you out there are dog lovers, but even though Lisa's dog Princess went missing alongside her, I see no indication that Princess was ever found. So even if Frank is a murderer and went on the run, I hope that he at least had the decency to ensure that Princess, as well as the puppy she supposedly gave birth to, got a good home. Anyway, another reason I'm so frustrated that the Unsolved Mysteries segment about this story is no longer available for viewing on their official channel is because every view that segment gets can increase the chance of someone with information coming forward. In closing, I definitely do not believe that this is one of the most mysterious cases ever featured on The Trail Went Cold, as it seems pretty obvious what happened. But I would like to see some sort of resolution for Lisa's parents, as they lost their only child, and they deserve to recover her remains and provide her with a proper burial. So if you happen to have any information about the disappearance of Lisa Myers Nugent, please contact the Horry County Police Department at 843-915-5350. That's 843-915-5350. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released an episode about the unsolved 2012 kidnapping of Violet Ripken, the mother of famous Baltimore Orioles baseball player Cal Ripken Jr., who was abducted from her home by an unidentified man who inexplicably kept her in captivity for 23 hours before returning her unharmed. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss another case from Unsolved Mysteries, the unexplained 1984 death of Kurt McFall. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Emma G. and Twyla H. Thank you so much for your support. Now, the reminder that later this year, The Trail Went Cold will be in attendance at two separate CrimeCon events. The first one is CrimeCon UK, which is returning to London and will be held at the Tower Bridge Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa on June the 10th and 11th. And 2 months after that, I'll be attending the regular CrimeCon event, which will be held from September the 22nd to the 24th at the World Center Marriott in Orlando, Florida. Our podcast has a specialized promo code which can be used to get a special 10% discount on tickets, and this time around, the same code is valid for both events. So in order to purchase tickets and get a 10% discount, you can either visit crimecon.co.uk or crimecon.com and use the special promo code COLE23. That's COLE23. And if that wasn't enough, The Trail Went Cold will also be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is taking place from August the 25th to the 27th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. We've now got a specialized promo code which you can use in order to get a 15% discount on tickets to the event, so if you would like to purchase tickets, please visit their website at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use our promo code TRAIL in order to get a 15% discount. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com and the promo code is TRAIL. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm sorry.